I've got to tell them about you because you have to have the bit where you blush where I tell them how brilliant you are. Ruth's had an amazing career. So she's worked with companies like Mars, P&G, and she started at Saatchi and McKinsey as well. She's also run her own business since 2007, I think, Galleon Blue. And so she helps marketeers have more impact and influence in the boardroom, as well as brushing up on their negotiation skills. So a future skill that I think everybody always needs to polish. Ruth is the author of a book, Marketing in the Boardroom, which I've just ordered and I'm about to read. It looks amazing, which is all about winning the hearts and minds of the board. So she's definitely going to be talking about that today. She's a regular speaker for the Marketing Society, and everybody I ever come across always sings her praises to me before we talk about her. This month, she's also just published another book, Female Entrepreneurs, The Secrets of Their Success. So she's got some great insights and stories for us here today. So please, everybody, welcome Ruth.
Thank you so, so much. Sophie, that was a very, very kind introduction. Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here today. It's always a pleasure to meet you guys. It's such a shame that I can't be there in person with you, because it's always good to meet the stars of the future. And this session is very much for you guys in terms of taking you through how to liaise and influence senior people. I spend most of my life doing big strategy projects in marketing and branding and customer growth. I spend a lot of time interviewing people and then developing strategies and then trying to get senior people to agree to those strategies. And most of those senior people are not marketing people. They're top team level, exco level or board level. Over time, I've kind of worked out a way to influence people and get things through them. So that's what I'm going to take you through today. And we're going to do two modules. We're going to do one around issues that bug senior people and how to avoid them. And we're going to do a module around how to handle challenging conversations. And often I've had challenging conversations with quite senior people. So these are kind of tried and trusted techniques. So we're going to do two modules. I'll talk for about 15 minutes and then I'll open up to Q&A, and then we'll have a second module and do the same thing again. And it's very much for you guys, so trying to make it as practical and relevant to what you're doing day to day. So please ask any questions as is helpful. The reason I got into this subject was that I remember being in P&G a long time ago as a brand manager. And I remember trying to get wash and go for kids through the senior team. And I went in and we had our market research and our business case and blah, blah, blah. And we did our presentation. And then at the end of it, they were like, nope, this isn't robust enough. We don't believe in it. Go away and try again. So we went back and did some more market research and some more business case stuff. And we came back in and exactly the same thing happened. And then we went in a third time, I think 9 months later, and eventually got it through. And when I talk to marketers, often they're struggling to engage senior people because marketing is such a strange subject. It's a creative, so you often can't make logical conclusions or linear conclusions in terms of what a spend will deliver. And secondly, it's got a lot of jargon, so it's a mystery to people who are not in marketing. So I got into this subject because I've just realized that marketers often struggle to engage non-marketers, be they peers of other in other teams or be they senior people. And just to say that these techniques work for anybody at any level. So if you're trying to influence anybody at any level, you'll find these techniques work. Everybody comfortable with that? So I'm gonna start in terms of marketers. They have a poor tenure. So CMOs are typically half the level in tenure in terms of months than CEOs. The latest one is 48 months versus 80. That's probably changing now as we speak. If we went back to 2008, those figures were 24 months versus 40 months. So the same ratios, but half the level. And you can see that CMOs are lower than any other C-suite member. And I think my favorite quote on this page is lots about how marketers are not financially robust and very poor ROI. But the quote at the bottom, marketing is too important to be left to marketing people, that's David Packard of Hewlett-Packard, is something that you see a lot in the press and about how marketers have to be better in the commercial stakes. When I wrote my book, I read all the other books in my genre. And what I found was that people either blamed senior people for not understanding marketing or marketers for not understanding commercial, not speaking the commercial language. My view is slightly different. Senior management are very keen to ensure the company is successful. So they look at things analytically by focusing on financials. They manage risks. They think about low risk versus high risk projects and how to balance them. And they think in terms of a short to midterm mindset because they're thinking about the stock price. So for them, they have a very analytical and risk orientated and short term mindset. Marketers quite rightly have a different mindset. They're about creating growth of the future, and we all know that the bigger the brand leaps, the bigger the innovation, the bigger the growth. So they have a very creative focus. They're willing to take risks because they know it's going to deliver greater rewards, and they have a more mid to long-term mindset. And that's really healthy for the company because otherwise companies won't survive. Marketing play a very important role. So I think it's really important that these two cultures and mindsets exist. But obviously there needs to be a bridge where the two can converse and talk together. So for me, no one's right or wrong, but it's really important that marketers need to recognize that the boardroom is not their territory and that they need to adjust their style when they go into the boardroom to engage with senior people and bring them on board. And it's really healthy for marketers to have a different mindset from board people or senior people, because they are the ones that are creating the growth of the future and the vision of the future. So for me, we're going to talk about engaging senior people, first of all, and then we're going to talk about handling challenging conversations, which is my signature piece. People often ask me, what is the one thing that I would advise people? I have quite a few one things, and I'll bring out some one things as we talk today. But one of the things that I tell people is that senior managers are very, very time starved. The more senior you get, the less time you have. Some senior people literally have 30-minute meetings where they're having to agree things in 30 minutes and then go to the next meeting and the next meeting. And if you imagine you're a CEO, the diversity of the subjects is going to be enormous. So the first thing is, when you're talking to senior people, they are going to be time starved, and you've got to respect their time. So it's really important when you're delivering something to be to talk commercially. How is it going to deliver business growth? Credibly, why is this is right? Concisely, get to the point quickly, and be very, very clear cut about what you want from them, so that they can see why they should engage. So that respecting their time is very important. But the second thing is that they're human. And this is a big one for me. So increasingly, as I've worked with senior people, I've realized that they feel often that they're just being sold to the whole time. And actually, they want to be involved in the problem solving. They want to be part of it. And also, they don't really understand marketing jargon. So they need to be talked to in plain English. And I always say, talk to them as you would talk to your mother. If your mother wouldn't understand what you're saying, how can you expect a non-marketing senior person to understand? So these are two things that I think whenever you're engaging with somebody senior, think about how little time they have, and also that they want to be engaged with as humans. For me, that helps transform the way you engage with them. So I'm going to take you through five things that bug senior people, and we'll walk through them one by one. So the first one is that I do quite a lot of training in terms of deck writing. And I get people to bring presentations to the training course, and they present them in the first 5 minutes, 5 minutes each. And I see this time and again that people don't write presentations to tell a clear story. The more senior you go, the more you have to have presentations that tell a very clear story, because they don't have time to try and work out what you're saying and time to engage. So I typically say it should be a short deck. It could be one page, 5 pages, 10 pages, but short. And it needs to be what your audience needs to hear, not what you want to tell them necessarily, with the clear facts behind them. And it needs to be very succinct. And then I often take an appendix in. So the appendix will have all the detail that we can go to if we need to. So I talked to some senior people about the optimal structure. In fact, quite a few senior people say it's very rare to see a good presentation, maybe 10% of the time. And the optimal structure for a presentation is, first of all, the context. Why am I here today? Why should you listen to this? And I think if you don't give a clear context up front, and if you probably experienced this yourselves, You're sitting there going, why am I here? Actually, what do I fancy for tea tonight? What's in my next meeting? What's the decision I'm going to make in the next meeting? Their mind wanders. So up front, I think you've got to be very clear in terms of, I'm here today because I want to get agreement to the next tranche of marketing spend, or I want to show you how the advertising is driving the growth, or I want to get your approval to some innovation ideas that I have. A very clear why this is important to them, why this is important to the business, why they should listen. And I think that most people miss that. Most people don't have that in their presentations. So that's one thing to take away. Then you show the clear facts. What's the issue? What's the opportunity? What's the facts to support it? Ideally, not always, but often you show options. So here are some options. Here are some pros and cons. This is our recommendation and why. And then, and very importantly again, what do we want from you? So Mr. Senior Person, I would like you to ask the R&D team to engage with me more closely. I'd like your permission for £1 million to spend on this campaign. I'd like your permission to take this innovation idea into market research, whatever it is. What are you asking them for? And being very clear about what you want from them today. So again, they feel like this hasn't been a waste of their time. And then what are they going to see next? When are you going to engage with them next? So that's a kind of presentation structure that works quite well. And the things I think often are missing are the context, why should they engage, and what do you want from them? And just to get into the rhythm of including that in your presentations. Secondly, it's about building a compelling fact base. Now, I was at McKinsey, I was taught to write very good charts, fact-based charts. And what I often see, again, in the training sessions I do, is that, first of all, we get charts, but there's no recommendation or so what at the beginning of the chart. And it's really important to have in the title, why are we looking at this chart? And in this case, hair care is pivotal to our success and so needs to be protected or prioritized or whatever it is. And here's the data to show that hair care is really big. So the first thing is, what is the point of this chart? What is it telling us? Why should we look at this data? So rather than just having hair care market shares, which I've often seen in charts, this has an actual so what. This is why this is important. And then you have data that supports the title. So often I see a title and then I see completely different data that doesn't support it at all. And again, that doesn't help a senior person. They'll spot that in seconds. But this is a classic chart. You've probably written lots like this in the past. Some top tips on other types of charts. So I'm quite a fan of small font size charts. I know senior people quite like them because it makes it seem as if we've looked at stuff in depth and across all dimensions. However, if you have a small font size chart, it's really important to pick out which are the key numbers to look at and what are they telling us. So in this case here, these numbers here are saying we have a dominant share in Europe and North America. You can see the share levels are higher. Or segment Y in autonomous is a high growth in automotive is a high growth segment. So bring the number and then put a comment as to why this is important and ensure that those comments then link up to the headline. And those work quite well with senior people, provided you do that. If it's just an open page with lots of numbers on it, they get overwhelmed. They don't know where to look. The next one, so at McKinsey, I was taught how to make qualitative data look quantitative. And this is using some Moon's technique or high, medium, low, or traffic light or whatever. This is concept testing. And this is looking at three concepts across the kind of key dimensions that you might do in qualitative research. So are they appealing? Are they relevant? Are they credible? Are they differentiated? And do they drive profitability? I can hear somebody talking in the background.
Contact with the right people.
Do you want to mute? Can everyone mute just in case there's a chitter-chatter in the background? Thank you
so much. And in this case here, I've rated the concepts against the different criteria and then created an average and said this is the one that we should progress with. This makes qualitative research data look much more robust and again is more persuasive to senior people. So that was a trick I learned at McKinsey. It's very clever. And then the next thing to say is that senior people love visual charts. So if you can create a chart, a visual diagram that represents the whole strategy on a page, that works really well. This is a touch point wheel. And so it lays out all the different touch points that you can build the brand in, and the yellow ones are the high impact ones. I've often done this with segmentation. So if you have a whole customer segmentation on a page and then talk through where are we now, where do we want to go to, where are the competitors, you can talk strategy on one page and they love that. It really enables them to get into it and understand it. So there's some stuff around getting charts that engage people. The third thing is one of my key favorite things. This is something that transformed me as a presenter. I was a nervous presenter. I hated presenting. I don't like being the star of the show. And this completely transformed me into a much better presenter. That is that I used to write my scripts. I used to have my 30 pages and write my script and try and learn the script. And then as I was speaking, I was trying to remember the next thing on the script and I'd forget it. And then I'd get flustered or whatever it was. I've learned over time that the best way to give a presentation is to think about, to anybody, is to think about what are the three key things I want to get agreement to today, or the three key messages I want to land. If I can remember that, the three key things I want to get agreement to, or the three key messages I want to land, it doesn't matter how much of the presentation I present, whether we get it done in 10 minutes or 2 hours, whether I present 10 pages or 30 pages, all that matters is that I get the agreement to the three key things, or I get that I land the three messages I want to land. And that completely transformed me. It relaxed me, it enabled me to then have fun with presentations and to go with the flow in the room. I remember working with one of the FTSE 100s with the CEOs, top 20 from around the world in a room together. And the top 20 around the world, if you think about them, they're quite high ego people. And so they were there for 3 hours and they hadn't seen each other for a while and they were chat, 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 chat. And we had a 30-page deck. We were trying to get agreement to move to one global brand. And the CEO and I were doing the meeting. And I probably spoke for an hour of the 3 hours. And I probably showed them 10 pages of the 30-page deck, but we got agreement. And that was because I was so focused on trying to get agreement to what I wanted to do, we let them meander wherever they wanted to go and then brought them back again. It worked really well. So this completely transformed me from a nervous presenter into somebody who's much more confident. I'm going to skip that. So then the next thing is creating a clear, succinct story on a page. So I found over time that senior people often don't have time to engage in a long deck. And if you can't write the story in one page, then you probably don't have a tight story. So what I tend to do now, quite early on when I'm doing something, is write the story down on a page and then I iterate the story. I often show it to people and get their input and then adapt it. I'm going to show you two examples. These are real life examples. So this is a high-end bank that I worked with. And this was great. The new CEO came in and he asked all his mates to join the bank. And his mates told him that it was an absolute nightmare joining the bank. And so I was brought in to, first of all, prove or disprove whether it was a nightmare. And then secondly, to look at how to join up to make it work, the onboarding experience work for new customers. And I came in, I interviewed 20 very high-end customers and 19 of them had had a very bad experience. I think four or five of them had had a horrendous experience. And one of them, it was so bad, I apologized to him for, even though it was nothing to do with me. And we used those 20 interviews to prove that there was an issue. And the way I did that in the meeting was I literally used their words, the customer's words, to explain the situation and the crises. And I remember in the meeting room, the board level, by the end of that session, they had their heads in their hands and the whole atmosphere in the room had changed to we have a problem. So this is a storyline that we took to the board at the end of the project. And it works, it's a story on a page. And this is a classic structure for a storylining page. It outlines the situation we're trying to resolve, the issue that we're facing, and what's our resolution. And so this is a classic structure that you're taught at McKinsey and you can read up a lot about. So the situation in this case is great client onboarding is imperative to building deeper client relationships because they'll buy more products from you and they'll recommend you to others. Our experience is terrible. For everybody, it's slow. For many, there are follow-up issues. And for some, 20% is a nightmare. And here are six things we're going to do to solve it, three that are back office and three that are front office with the sales team. And that story, that took ages to write, but that story went to the senior people and was agreed So you can see the whole story on a page, and it's very easy to run something like that past a senior person to go, do you agree, do you disagree, what do you think? I've got another structure here. This structure always works. If you're struggling with a structure, this one I always find works, which is, what's our recommendation and why? What are the implications and what do we want your agreement to now? So recommendation and rationale, we want to simplify our brand portfolio to one brand. Why? Because it will drive ROI, increase product cross-sell, and X is our strongest brand. The implications are that we need to find a better way to communicate, we need good sub-brands, and we need to be more joined up. Today, we want money, we want agreement to money to start the migration. And that, again, is a real life case, and that structure works really well. So I'd say if you're wanting to engage senior people, the more you can write your story on a page and take it to them and ask their view, the more they can engage with it quite quickly. And then the fifth one, I love this one. This idea of involving senior people early on in the problem solving before you're ready to sell them something. So this came from a guy called Gary. Gary was a COO. And Gary didn't want to do an interview on brand with me, and he tried to avoid me for ages. And then eventually I managed to get 15 minutes in Leeds with him, literally 15 minutes in Leeds with him. I had to go to Leeds for 15 minutes. And I ended up talking with him for an hour. And at the end of the meeting, he engaged. It was great. I said, do you want to be in the next round? And he went, yeah, I'd love to be in the next round. And I said, Gary, but you didn't want to see me. So why do you want to be in the next round? And he said, Ruth, this has been such a lovely meeting because most people come here and all they do is sell to me. It makes me feel like I'm pushed up against a wall, that they don't want to hear my input. They just want me to agree. And if I say anything, it's a waste of my time because they're not going to listen anyway. Whereas he said, you've actually come here and genuinely asked my opinion at an early enough stage that it matters. And so I've learned over time, often just picking senior people's brains and going, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? Is that good? Not good? It really helps in A, starting to get them to engage in the subject, but also working out who supports you, who doesn't support you and why, and how can you resolve that? So this is a very favourite one of mine, of trying to get to people early on to, whilst you really want their point of view. And then I was also told by senior people that when you're in a big meeting, they want to problem solve as well. So often they'll ask questions. And if they ask questions, that's a good sign because they're kicking the tires of the recommendation to see if it works for them. So if they're asking questions, that's good. It's not bad. And they advise, don't get defensive, don't blag, don't waffle. Instead, do your homework, work out who's going to be for and against. Welcome the question. Pause to think about the question. Answer the question succinctly, and then say, have I answered it correctly? Are you happy with that answer? Or admit it if you don't know and say, actually, that's a great question. I'll go and talk to the finance guy. I'll be back to you in 3 days. And so they really advise people to, if seeing people ask questions, that's a really good thing. So those are my five issues. So we'll pause for questions. Any questions, thoughts, comments, feedback?
Feel free to submit your questions in the chat box or turn on your camera to ask any questions to Ruth directly.
A great point from Annalisa there. Simplicity is such a painful journey to get to. It takes so much more time.
It does.
I love the focus on the audience as well there, that insight and that understanding that there could be amazing people you're trying to deal with. They're just so busy and they're time poor. And if you can help them with managing their time and making it simple with what the ask is, that would be brilliant.
I also love the
three things, right? The power of three. Every brain can remember three things. Some people can remember up to five things, but three is, there's a poetry and a simplicity to just having three things every time. It's a great framework to remember. It makes things simple.
I'm often asked by people lower down, how can I talk to a senior person? They're not going to engage with me. And I've said to them in the past, if you see a senior person at the coffee machine or in the kitchen or whatever, and you say to them, can I take 5 minutes of your time to get your opinion on something? Most senior people will go, sure. Two reasons. One, it's only 5 minutes. And two, everybody loves to be asked their opinion. And so I'd advise people to do that. But then if you do go and see them, only take 5 minutes. Only stay longer if they're happy for you to stay longer, but respect the fact you've only asked for 5 minutes. And that works. That helps you get noticed.
so respectful for people to use their time wisely. So a couple of great questions coming in. Charlotte and Sarah and Tiffany, do you want to turn your cameras on and come and talk to us? Tiffany, you've got a question there about getting early input from senior leaders. Do you find that many leaders change their stance or forgot their original input? So how do you deal with a bit of inconsistency? Do you want to come and show your face, Tiffany? So we can...
Hi there. Yeah, this is Tiffany. I've tried to put the camera on, but it says it's unable to start because the host has stopped it. So apologies. but yeah, I find that so important in terms of, you know, making sure you get engagement and get those conversations started early on with leaders as part of the process, and to kind of gather as much feedback, especially across different areas of the business where you can. But then what I also find is that you come back round to kind of next stage or presenting is that people sort of forgot their original stance or sort of changed their mind completely, which can be a bit frustrating. So I'm just wondering, you know, how you've dealt with that.
Yeah, two things. One is it's often quite good to say, so last time we talked about, and this is what we agreed up front, nothing wrong with doing that at all. So that you're reminding them of what they said. So that's a useful trick. The second thing is that people may have changed their minds for good reason, either because they've talked to their boss or they've talked to peers, or because a new piece of data has come in. So I would say often trying to understand why they've changed their minds, what's behind it. So is there a genuine reason there, or even an emotional reason, as in my boss told me to say no. Or is it that actually they've just been contrary and forgotten? Mm-hmm. So those would be my two things. First of all, to remind them up front, and then secondly, to try and understand if there's a real reason behind it.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
And Annalisa's got a great question there. I mean, we're all told to be authentic and be true to our own personalities and whatever. Where's the line around adapting your personal style to other people's personalities when you're having a one-to-one with people? How do you deal with it?
I think for me, I'm the most authentic I've ever been, because I go in and see people and I genuinely want their point of view. So I'm in there going, they've got a point of view that's genuine. I've got to understand why. I've got to put myself in their shoes and see the world through their eyes. And by doing that, it takes the ego away from me, if that makes sense. It's not about me, it's about them. So I'm there to help them articulate their point of view. I'm there to understand their point of view, and I'm there to try and represent their point of view and to find a way around any issues, which means that I'm in there just trying to be helpful. And I found that's made me more authentic than I've ever been, because I just have fun with it. I go in there and, you know, hear what they're saying and try and represent them and try and serve them almost. So that's what for me, that's what's happened. I think when you're selling, that's when you're actually playing more of a game.
But in theory, I mean, all selling is fundamentally about helping people. If you believe that what you've got is something that's going to help them. So what you're saying is just keep that focus on how can I help this person I'm speaking to, and I'm thinking about them rather than getting distracted and thinking about yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Helps with it all. Some great questions coming in here. So Abdul, I don't know if you can show your camera. Are you there? Are the cameras there?
Yes, I am. But the camera's saying no because it's stopped. Oh, here we are. I can stand it.
Perfect.
Hi, Ruth. Thank you very much for a very lovely session. And I was just going to ask your opinion around approaching your boss's boss when you want to get an opinion or some feedback on something directly, or to steer in the right direction, or more even for developmental purposes without pissing off your real boss, actually.
You need to tread carefully. I would say two things. One is, what's the relationship between your boss and his boss or her boss? If they've got a healthy relationship, it's probably easier. If they don't have a healthy relationship, then you need to tread very carefully. I would say always be transparent. So if you want to go and talk to your boss's boss, maybe mention it to your boss and say, I'd love to go and get their point of view. Are you comfortable with that? Or if you bump into your boss's boss in the corridor and ask the point of view and she talks to you, then mention it to your boss. So just say, oh, by the way, I bumped into them. I asked them this was their view, just wanted to let you know. So I would say be transparent, and then that way they know you're not playing games.
Thank you.
Being honest to people. And Sarah Hood, you've got a question about what you do with your with the team. So if you know how to do it, that's brilliant. But what do you do with your team in terms of coaching and training?
Yeah, I guess to me, it's kind of, I like having, in the style you presented today, very much a kind of, this is kind of some ideas on how you can do this. With the team, who kind of are in a different mindset, obviously we've signed up to this course and kind of prepared to learn. How would you advise kind of teaching this to your team? Would you kind of coach it or tell them what to do?
I think very much coach. I mean, I spend a lot of time coaching. So, you know, if they're writing presentations, then coach them on the need to put in a context and the need to put in some asks. So throw the question at them, you know, why should this person listen? It's really important to have a context up there. And if they're going in and talking to senior people or even peers and their communication style isn't great, then coach them on it. Coach them on the fact that they're there to try and understand people's points of view and embrace them and work with them. Actually, one young female came to me after one of my training sessions, one of my speaking sessions. And she asked me to coach her, which I did. And she was really struggling with, in meetings, being seen to incorporate other people's points of view. It was really holding her back. So this, you know, if somebody in your team is doing that, then coach them on the need to respect other people's points of view and embrace them and find ways around to mitigate the issues. So I would coach.
Thanks. Thank you.
So coaching, asking, ask, don't tell, ask the question. Questions that'll help them come up with a solution. That's what we're saying here. Yeah. Okay.
Shall we go on the second section?
Yes. Lots of other great questions there, but let's pause and move on.
Fantastic. Okay. So this is my signature piece. So a client asked me to think about how to handle challenging conversations. So I made this up, and I think it resonates really well. I use this in my personal life as well as my work life. So it works with friends, with partners, maybe even with kids, I don't know. So this is about how to recognize when you're getting into a challenging conversation and then how to handle it. So what I've learned over time, I love this, that many conversations we have in business are rational. So we make a business case, it's very logical, it's very fact-based, and we go in and try and get agreement to it. And that's what we talked about in the last session. So that context, facts, options, recommendation, ask, and next step structure works beautifully for a rational presentation. However, often we are actually hitting emotional conversations, and emotional conversations are ones where you're making a recommendation which is not good for the person you're presenting to or for their team. So for example, it might mean that we stop making targets, or I'm going to lose some power, or it's going to force me to do something that my boss isn't going to like or my peers aren't going to like. And when you hit an emotional conversation, no business case is ever going to crack through it. So I often get asked, can you do me a business case to show that we should spend 10 million on advertising for my CEO? And I'm like, if your CEO doesn't want to advertise, a business case is not going to do it. We've got to find out what's behind some of the issues. The reason I've hit this is because I've done a lot of brand migration, and I think brand migration is one of the biggest, most emotional areas in marketing and branding, because if you're migrating your brand to the mothership, you're going to lose power, or that's how you feel, you're going to lose power. And I was very lucky to work on the Norwich Union to Aviva name change. So I just quickly talk about that. Norwich Union changed its name to Aviva because of basically, in the 1990s, they had gone and acquired lots of countries, businesses and countries around the world. And 10 years later, they had 26 countries, of which 23 were called Aviva. They put in the Aviva name because they realized that people couldn't say Norwich in Asia and they couldn't say Norwich in the US. So that is why the Aviva name was created. It's because Norwich was considered to be too hard a word to say. So roll on 10 years later, they had three markets that were not called Aviva: Norwich Union in the UK, which was 50% of the business, Commercial Union in Poland, and a Hibernian in Ireland, which means Ireland. So that's a really tough name to change. And I remember going to see Agnieszka, who was the CMO in Poland, and it was the first meeting. And we said, you know, we're here because we're going to move Commercial Union to Aviva. And we were about two-thirds of the way through the meeting, and Agnieszka stood up and she said, I want you to get out of here. I want you to go back to London. You're killing my baby. That's literally what she said, you're killing my baby. And she had literally launched Commercial Union in 1989 or 1990, whenever it had opened up in Poland, whenever it started in Poland. And she'd launched the business from that time. So it really was her baby. And I learned from her the power of three. So if you've got an emotional issue, first of all, you have to recognize it. And the second thing is that you will need three meetings to get through that emotional issue. The first meeting is, get out of here, I don't want to listen to it. The second meeting is, oh, you're back. You've got to have someone senior supporting you. And the third meeting is, how can I make this work to my advantage? And in her case, the second one was like, oh, CEO supporting you, you're back. And the second one, and the third one was, so I'm going to get lots of extra money, am I? Great, so I can do all my pet projects because of doing the brand migration. And I saw that. I literally was doing an organizational redesign last year. We literally went through the same three meeting structures, you know, get out of here to, oh, you're back to, oh, how can I use this to my advantage? And I think between meeting two and meeting three, people decide, are they going to stay on the train and continue with the company, or are they going to leave? And that's the point at which it makes or breaks. So moving to one global brand is a great example of an emotional situation. Investing in building a stronger brand. So I worked with a company where the CEO was beholden to margin targets and therefore did not want to invest in building a stronger brand. And it took a CEO change for him for that project to then rise to the fore, because he knew otherwise he wouldn't make his targets. Or moving from a local to a global positioning, if the global positioning is not as good and your local boss is going to get frustrated with you when you don't make as many sales. These are all things where you can't make a rational argument because people just don't want to do it. So I say, first of all, to people, recognize you're in an emotional situation and recognize that it's going to take three meetings at least. Three is a good number. Don't try and get it all done in one meeting. It just won't happen. So the model I use is this one. So I'll just take you through this. As we talked in the first section, if it's not emotional, then we make a rational case. And we talked about the structure in terms of the context, the facts, the options, the recommendation, ask, and next steps. So present that case. In the meeting, ask if you have their agreement, and if not, come back with a follow-up meeting. It's what you do day in, day out. However, if you're in an emotional situation, what I recommend is to do a fact-finding meeting early on before you've locked down a recommendation. So in that meeting, you go and talk individually to all the key relevant people, and it could be your peers and other teams, it could be senior people, it could be your team even. And you go in and you do a one-on-one meeting with them, and you take in a hypothesis, so that one-page hypothesis, and you take them through it, and you say, do you agree, do you not agree, is this something that works for you? And by doing that, you work out who are your supporters, who are your detractors, and who is neutral. You can use your supporters to help you. You can use your detractors to help problem solve, to find ways around their issues. And you've got time then to work through the showstoppers and get data to prove your case, like place market research or whatever you want to do. And in that meeting, what I would do, if it's proving problematic, I would, first of all, identify areas of common ground. So where do you agree? Then what are the one or two sticking points where you disagree and why? Ask them if there's anything you can bring them that will make them feel better, facts, data, evidence, or conditions will change or whatever. And then if you're still not getting anywhere, try and understand why, so how to fix their issues, and encourage them to talk to others, their peers, and give them time to get used to the idea. Often it takes a bit of time, those three meetings, to get used to something. I certainly had, I had a guy who was probably my worst meeting. He was exceptionally rude to me. It was the end of the day. It was 5 o'clock. I think he'd had a bad day. And I presented to him just one-on-one. I showed him my paper, and he went off on one for 15 minutes about how I was wasting his time and how this was ridiculous and how he didn't want to do this and I should just get out of his office. And it was one of the worst meetings I've had. And I remember just sitting there going, don't flinch, just write down everything he's saying. Which is what I do. I write as I go. And he disagreed with the proposal, but when he went and talked to his peers, he was the only one who disagreed. And so he decided not to fight the battle and went along reluctantly. And 6 months later, he actually did say, this was the right thing to do, I was wrong. But that encouraging them to talk to others and get used to the idea is really good. Give them time, and often they'll come around in their own accord. So when you're negotiating, top tips, set the context, show the page, and then listen to them. Try and understand where they're coming from. Try and understand their point of view, their issues. Negotiate, try and find ways around the issue. Can you find ways to fix their issues? And then raise any outstanding issues that you think they may be concerned by, and agree what they'll see next. So I ask lots of questions. I say to summarize what you're saying. And this shows that I've understood them, that I've been listening hard. If I hear you correctly, what you're saying is, what can I show you to convince you? What would need to change? What elements of the plan are you comfortable with? So I ask lots and lots of questions. I let them be emotional. I let them get their issues out. I think of it as them being sick across the table. If they're getting angry or whatever, it's like, to me, they're being sick across the table. So I let them do that. I let them feel heard. I listen, I probe, I talk honestly to them directly, and I summarize. What I don't do is sell, argue, say they're wrong, hide behind charts, bamboozle them with data. I let them have their say, and I try and understand where they're coming from. I try and see the world through their eyes. And whilst I'm doing this, I write like crazy. I take detailed notes of what they're saying. I do that for a number of reasons. First of all, I can feedback their language. Secondly, they can see that I'm really listening to them, and they've got to be careful what they say to me. And third, sometimes you get different segments thinking different things, and I can go back then and work through the different segments and what's causing people to be different. If that doesn't work, I then escalate up. So if I can't convince them, there may be things going on in the company that I don't know. So what I do is I take it up the line, and I let the bosses have it out. So my boss with their boss or whomever, and I let them debate it out. They may know things that I don't know. And if that doesn't work, then I gracefully retreat. So sometimes the timing's just not right, and the best thing to do is just go away for 6 months, maybe collect some more data, work on it on the side, or actually maybe not work on it at all, and wait for things to change, for the timing to be right. So it may be that there needs to be new proof, case study or data or market research data to prove the case, or an external change, like there's a sales drop or a regulatory backlash, or an internal change like a new CEO. So sometimes the timing's not right, and you just need to let it breathe a bit and then come back in 6 months. So that's my model. Do we want to go to questions?
Sadly, Ruth, we are running out of time, but there's so much in there. I was scribbling furiously and listening intently. I mean, gold dust in there, because it's no good being, coming up with an amazing idea and being right, unless you can get everybody else to buy into it, to unblock things and make things happen. So the influence side of things is critical. And there is hundreds of things in there. So I was just going to do something very quickly, which Linda will probably kill me for, because it's going to take a bit of time. But you talk very clearly about the importance of that framework of three when you're actually convincing people. I just thought we might just take a moment for everybody who's on chat. There will be things being shared, the recording of the session, everything will be shared. But could you all just jot down very quickly the top three things that you think you're going to take away from this presentation? Three things you want to make absolutely sure you remember or you thought were really, really helpful. Let's just take a moment to pause and capture that on chat to see what you are going to take away from today. Power of three, the emotional side of it all. People buy things emotionally and justify them rationally, but making sure that you think about people's emotions, great. Letting people vomit, I think, is going to stick in everybody's minds, definitely. And pacing it. Sometimes things you can't do straight away, it might take three sessions. Let them be sick. Waiting for the right time. Timing in business, like in comedy, is everything. So making sure you're thinking about the timing when you're communicating with people. Less is more, people are busy, getting the language right, paying back people's their own lexicon. Don't bore them.
That's great. Love it.
Really interesting to see what lands with people out of all the brilliant things you've shared with us. Thank you so much, Ruth.
Have a great day. guys. My absolute pleasure. Hope to meet you in the future.
We will definitely, if it's okay, Ruth, we might just follow up on a couple of the questions that are in the chat and make sure we can share them with everybody, because there's some great questions in there as well. So everybody else, there is now time for a very, very quick break. Thank you so much. You're going to be put in any breakout room before you join us in a couple of minutes for a brilliant session with the very creative and fantastic Andy Fennell. So try and take as little time as possible so we can come back and crack on with the next amazing session. Thank you so much, Ruth. There's lots of thank yous coming through from everybody there.
Thank you so much. Lovely to see you.